Check, check, check. Oh, hello, my friends, and welcome to Chatting Between Takes. I'm your host, Sean Benson, and you're not going to believe this, but this is actually my second podcast of the day, but you're only going to hear this. Why? Okay, so I was watching Tig. This documentary is phenomenal. Watch this, about Tig Notaro, the comedian, and so she did this set at the Largo. Largo on Fairfax and Beverly, not at Beverly, in Los Angeles. Well, by the way, to where I'm currently driving, Los Angeles. I say Beverly because I used to live on Genesee, right near Fairfax and Beverly. Not real far from the Largo, Bill Burr TM. Okay, so, actually I remember a very bizarre night where me and Terry Hatcher, who I didn't really know before then, were watching Paul F. Tompkins do a great set. And then my girlfriend at the time, who wasn't there, got all mad because Terry Hatcher's like, oh, where's your girlfriend? And I said, oh, she's in bed because we're going in the morning to Tijuana so she can have her own urine injected back into her body because she's into that kind of thing. And then the mutual friend of me and Terry Hatcher told my girlfriend that, and my girlfriend is like, you can't go around telling people this. And I'm thinking, well, why not? Like, it's what you're doing, and whatever. Anyways, one of many things I got in shit for from that lady. I never knew where the line was. Hey, John Mayer. Well, all of the walls are continually changed. He sang that. Big hit for him. Hey, I get it, man. I get it. Sometimes, well, hey, sometimes you don't say hi to the cat, right? We've talked about it. Dig through the old podcasts. Anyone who can tell me the cartoon about the cat gets a free Chatting Between Takes mug. So I recorded, so Tig Notaro did this set at the Largo after she'd gotten cancer. And basically, it was mind-blowing. Bill Burr was there, Louis C.K. was there, and it apparently was just such an honest, funny, perfect set of comedy, like a once-in-a-lifetime, if you weren't there, you weren't there kind of thing. But because of social media, literally the next morning, this woman's whole life and career had changed because enough people had at the very least said what they saw, and ultimately that recording got out. So the point is Tig made a recording of this performance of hers that then Louis C.K. sold through his website, and it like sold more in 1 week than most albums do. Not Adele 25 though, holy shit. Woo! Hello, is it me you're looking for? Tell me how to win your heart. If you haven't seen the full video of Lionel Richie, Hello, do yourself the biggest favor in the world and watch it. It's probably the best video ever made. Just watch it. That sculpture at the end, forget it. Spoiler alert. So, Tig recorded this set. At the Largo, they don't allow photography or video, but she was able to record it. And it made all the difference because this monumental, life-changing, career-changing set had been recorded, got out, changed her life. I did a podcast earlier, and because I don't have my normal headset, I wanted to position the mic the way I have it now, which I'm actually going to check in a sec, but I believe is a much better spot for less wind noise. Let me just check one thing. You might hear a zipper. Hold up. Let me make sure we're recording. Yeah, we are. So, a lot less wind noise. It's sort of tucked into my collar, basically. It's a good spot. It's comfortable for me. And I know from looking that the sound's pretty good compared to even the headset. Somehow, in all my shuffling, I stopped the recording after 1 minute. So, my Tig Notaro, my Largo set, my urine being injected into my own buttock. No, that doesn't make sense. And if you were listening along, you'd know that. My Largo set is lost forever. And as such, my life will remain unchanged because I dropped the ball. And I hit stop on record of the podcast that was going to change your life and mine. As such, you're left with this drivel. I'm on my way to Los Angeles. I left Toronto around 6:20 this morning. It was supposed to be 6, but I tell you, my lady, that's just a warm bed. And it ain't always easy to get out of it. It was especially not easy because last night I was supposed to go to sleep around 10. Too warm a bed, too happy a place. Too happy a place. So anyways, I am nearing St. Louis, Missouri. Do you say St. Louis, St. Louis? Not a ton to report about the drive other than I've stopped at a few pilots and I think they're called Rough Ranger or Red Rangers. They're like pilot affiliates. Okay, I just gotta say it. A lot of really big people. Like a lot of people, like surprisingly large number of people who, I don't know the politically correct way to say it, are taking in a lot of calories and not expending a lot. I hope that doesn't get me fired from my podcast saying it that way. Because we're all so sensitive. It's not a stereotype if it's true. So that one's, I noticed that. And Toledo. If you live in Toledo, send me a tweet. I think it's Sean Benson on Twitter. What's up with Toledo? It looks like Detroit part two. Looks pretty burnt out, looks pretty depressed. If you're living in Toledo, I hope you're having a good time because that was a tough looking city. I'm kind of, they call it the Midwest, I think. It's not really the Midwest. Like, if you look at a map, if you're divided into thirds, you'd have the East Coast, the West Coast, the Middle, and then you'd have the West of the Middle or the East of the Middle. So I don't really know why I'm in what's called the Midwest. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I don't know anything. Maybe I don't know any American geography. My cousins used to think we had igloos and kayaks all in Canada. Actually did. Like, weren't joking. So maybe I'm just as bad with Merca. Everything I know about America, I learned from Family Ties, Three's Company. I'm going to Los Angeles for two reasons. I've talked around this a little bit. One is I was so depressed at the thought of putting my car away that my buddy Eric Valdez said I could leave it at his garage he has. And I went, holy crap, I get to do this road trip I've been dying to do. I wish you could see what I'm seeing right now. I mean, the landscape, honestly, is a little plain. I'm trying to kick through the first sort of boring part. It's going to do 12, maybe 14 hours of driving today. And then the, however, you know, this morning I woke up and behind me in the east was this mauve and purple, and there was a real frost in the air in Toronto. And if you don't know what frost in the air is like, there's a slight crystal quality even in the air. So light then diffuses out through it very differently. It was magnificent. Magnificent. Then I kicked all the way down, blah, blah, blah. And now I'm on the other side where now I'm getting all these scarlets and salmons and pinks kicking through the clouds. It's a joke how gorgeous it is. And I've just been driving through America for a number of hours, drinking coffee, losing podcasts. My car's radio so-so. I don't really listen to the radio in this 911 too much. I just kind of listen to the engine and the wind and think. So that became, yeah, why don't I drive down, fly home, and then in the winter, the way a golfer would get depressed because they can't golf for 4 or 5 months, oh, I'll just take a golf trip to Tucson. I'm kind of going to do that down to LA and then go to Willow Springs or Laguna Seca and do the whole car thing and basically give myself a shot of, legal heroin. So that's the reason all this came to pass. And then what occurred to me is, well, Why not take some meetings with managers? And why not consider pilot season down there? Now this, my friends, is the thrust of what I want to talk about. I'm very scared about this. I left LA in great form 5 years ago. I was also heavily in debt, but I was healthy and I was happy, and I had just started working again after a sort of self-induced hiatus, both crashing and burning, and then actually spending as much time not on booze or drugs, getting internally healthy and sort of a paradigm and bearings and a sort of foundation upon which to live. And at the time, I wasn't working, hence being in debt when I moved back. But at the same time, you know, I even had a girlfriend, the same urine girl, who I bet she'd love that I'm calling her that, who used to say, "You're going to be really happy one day that you had this time not working." Oh boy, was she right. Was she ever right, man? While I love working, to have all those, like literally years, about 2.5, where it's just therapy and group stuff where, you know, I get to sort of mend and piece together, stitch together a ratty old bear into something recognizable as a being, because it was all pieces. So a shattered, a million little pieces, whatever the hell that book's called. Poor James Frey. I don't think he's poor. That was such a great book. I don't care that that book wasn't nonfiction. I don't know if you know the story, A Million Little Pieces. He wrote this book. Oprah had him on. It was like the bestseller about his recovery from addiction. And then it turns out like much of it was fabricated, because apparently when he'd given this book around, using a lot of his own stuff, but it was definitely fabricated, publishers weren't that interested. As a fiction, they didn't find it real compelling. So then he basically said, "No, this is nonfiction. This is my memoir." And then everyone went, "Oh my God, the stuff you've done, this is salacious." Sold millions of copies, and then he turned out to be a fraud. But he's not a fraud. I don't know, maybe he's a fraud. I don't care. That book's phenomenal. So, My Million Little Pieces had to come back together. I was lucky enough to have that time, get back to Toronto, start working again. All I cared about was getting out of debt, because there was no way I was really going to book acting work. I mean, I'd had nibbles in that five-year awkward period since I sort of got let go from General Hospital for drugs and alcohol, and then kind of just started working again. It was very, very awkward. It was a very difficult time, but at the same time, I realized that I could be happy without external things, which was crazy. Because for me, it was always next thing, next thing, next thing, and then that next thing was never fulfilling. And I actually learned how to just be fulfilled, not every second of every day, but generally. So being broke and not having any work was actually one of the best things that ever happened to me, because I realized that I'd be okay without all the accoutrement. And then, as I've talked about, as those things came back, they come back as sort of joyous tools, not as definitions of self. So anyways, all I was worried about was getting out of debt so that I could have self-esteem and move forward in the world. There's no way I was gonna ever feel like a man if I couldn't take Emily out for dinner once a month. Sorry, that was me and that was my version of it. And in many ways, it still is. Dinner and a movie was like my baseline, but it was really hard to do because I was in debt. How do I pay it back? And I won't bore you with that whole debt repayment structure. But anyways, I learned a humility and a maturity around money. And then I started acting again. My point is this. That led to headshots, that led to teaching, that led to what I would call a good life. Really satisfying, deep foundation. However, I am an entertainer. I mean, you know I call myself that. I think entertainer is the best word I can use, because whether I'm doing something very dramatic, it's still entertainment. And then the podcast, entertainment, playing music, entertainment. And even the photos, I'm not doing anything professional right now, but I'm shooting creatively. So again, for me, that's entertainment. So I need to focus on being just an entertainer for a while. I can't be a teacher. I can't be working professionally for clients. I've got a few, you know, things to wind up with those, but I'm taking 6 months off. So, admitting that I want this entertaining Sean at the forefront again is scary as fuck to me for two reasons. One is, it's just scary to admit what I want when there's no guarantee I'll get it. Now look, I can always be and would be very happy doing what I do in Toronto. It is fucking great. Can do a play, can teach, can shoot the TV and film as it comes up. Luckily, it comes up a lot. So, you know, it's all working. But I really want to hang it out. You know, that lead role, the lead roles in film, or at the very least a flow that, as good as it gets, it's still not quite there yet. And, you know, I've never had that, by the way. When my first series ended, it was a while before my second came. And when that ended, it was over a year. I didn't even work a day before General Hospital. But these series were significant, so I had like a name from them or whatever buzz and heat is. So it was okay, and I'd been paid consistently for those jobs, regardless of how much. It was day after day after day of work. So I was positioned to have a bit of time, and then that time did pass, but ultimately led to another gig. The time between my gigs is way less. However, when they're not the lead roles, it better be way less. So it's a weird balance that's been struck. I want to go for it again. And that's scary because I don't even have a meeting set up in LA. I could. I have a lot of leads. A lot of my friends have been brilliant about making intros for me. It's also Thanksgiving, pilot season's coming up, so they're busy. And I don't have singular heat from any one job. I don't even know if any of that's relevant. I don't know because I don't work the business side of LA. You know what I'm saying? I have to rely on my agent. I have to rely on my desire. Ooh, now we're getting to it, aren't we? You know, I spent this last Saturday doing 12 hours straight, I'm not kidding, of martial arts. 12 hours straight. Went into the dojo at 6 a.m., left at 6 p.m. And by the way, much like now, I hopped in my car with 2 feet of snow on the top. Me and Mike Russell, we said, fuck it. We gonna drive home to Toronto. It was glorious. It was absolutely glorious. And you know, it's so funny. A lot of my well-meaning and loving friends are like, you're gonna be okay. I don't know if you should drive home in that snow. What about snow tires? Like, do you have them? And everyone who had just done the 12 hours of martial arts with me, there were 20 of us, 21 including Sensei Suino, the instructor, they were all just like, cool, have a good drive. You know what I mean? Like, they kind of got that, yeah, I guess there might be something unsafe about that, but you know what you're doing, you love driving, you're gonna do it anyways, so enjoy. And boy, did I. So anyways, in that 12 hours, you know, there's a lot of ideas that we combined. I'd say we were on our feet 10 of it, maybe 9.5 minimum. Grappling, throwing, striking, and then we added a little bit of philosophy and sort of motivational stuff. A lot of that I don't want to talk about because Sensei Nicholas Suino's going to be writing a book that I'm going to tell you all about so that you get it because it can change your life. But the one thing that he talks about openly, so I don't mind mentioning it here, is burning your boat. So when I went to LA the first time, I burnt my boat. What that means is, when you know you want to go to that island over there, and your gut says it, and you've got that vibration when you think of it, be willing to burn your motherfucking boat. Row there, and then use your damn boat to build your cabin and fucking burn the rest for heat. So that you don't, the first sign of trouble, duck out of there. I think I mentioned this on the podcast before. So when I went to LA the first time, my Canadian agent had just retired. So I went to LA. I had no storage in Canada. I had no stuff. I'd sold everything. And I just fucking loaded my shit and went to LA. I had no Canadian representation for my career. I just lived in LA. That was it. I went home when I felt like it to Toronto, but home actually became Los Angeles for 7 years. And what's interesting is, and this is why I love the burn your boat idea, my career did begin to do what I went there for it to do. You know, I landed a lead on an ABC show. Problem is, the whole other stuff that I've talked about ad nauseum. So, you know, I went for one dream and I actually came back to Toronto with another dream fulfilled that I didn't realize I had, and that one was of liking myself. That notwithstanding, that's still brilliant for burning my boat. Because what I didn't do, and this is thanks to my dear friend Danielle Harris, who said to me, when things started to get rough and I was trying to get off booze and drugs, I ducked back to Toronto for a week, 2 weeks, a month at a time to try and get healthy. And she was just like, if you can't fucking get healthy here, you're never gonna get healthy, because it's here or there, it's just you. I'm paraphrasing, but it was tough love, and it was right. So I ended up getting real healthy in LA. Not alone, but alone, if you know what I mean. Like, I didn't run anywhere that last round, and it's the one that took. And that was really key for me. So even that was part of the burning my boat aspect, was none of that could have been foreseen. And even when I tried to bounce back, it never took. It was until I stuck my fucking feet in the dirt in LA and said, I live here, this is where I'm gonna get healthy. Now, moving back was a great decision. Easily one of the best of my life, for no reason other than friends and family. And then that becomes, you know, Emily too, which, sorry ladies, spoken for, because I met her right after moving back, and bam, like, wow, there's a thing called real and reciprocal and generous and sexy love in this world. Woo, who'd have thought it? Even if I'd had pieces of that, it was always splintered. So I'm not going to LA to burn my boat right now, but I am going because I want to, not because there's any prudence to going. I don't know what's prudent about driving 15 hours a day so that your car's in LA, so that then in the winter you can go drive it 15 hours a day. That's kind of my plan. That's the plan. If anyone's like, what's the plan? I'm like, that's it. That's the plan. That's as far as I've gotten. But that feels so fucking right that that's good enough. So, not just going to burn the boat. There's different islands, you know? The island isn't take everything I've earned and go back to LA. But the fear and even the admission to you that I want it. Like, I want it. I want it. You can't have it. I want magic bus. Too much magic bus. Quick, don't look it up. Chatting between takes. Mug. Up for grabs. Who's the artist? It's pretty obvious. So, I want it. I want it. I want the fucking stardom. I want the lead roles. I want the magazine covers again. I'll be fine without it, that much I know, but I want it. And I want it for two reasons. I want it for all the reasons that include quote-unquote success, i.e. financial, i.e. I like being recognized for my work. I don't do my work not to have a ton of people watch it and like it. Entertainer. But the other thing is the freedom of flow. You know, there's been a few periods, not a ton, but a few in my life, where I've been able to say no to something, where I've been able to choose one project over another. It's glorious. But most importantly, that means that I'm probably going from one job to another job to another job. And I love this thing. So that's what I want too. You know, I look at my friend Neil McDonough, who gets to do that. So, well, maybe now after his role on Arrow, but he's not necessarily a household name, although he's a household face. Or maybe he is, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, he basically is. But he's always working, and it's glorious. And I want that. I just want it. I see friends of mine who have it, and I want it. I feel vulnerable telling y'all that, because it's a lot easier to just quote something zen or things will unfold as they do. Of course that's true. I don't, see, what I used to say is, no, that's not true. I can control the fate. Now, that becomes an interesting one for me. What can I control? What can't I? And then the wisdom to know the difference, right? That's it. That's where serenity comes from. So I would rather be serene than famous. That's a fact. So what I'm asking for is it all. I want to be serene. I don't mind working hard, by the way. Working hard doesn't compromise serenity necessarily. I know, because I've shot things for 18 hours a day, 3 weeks straight, and been very serene, been very fulfilled, tired, but serene. So I don't always know what the thing I can control and can't control, because I can't fucking call my agent 2 days after the audition, make up some bullshit reason I'm phoning, just to try and like hear in his voice if he's heard anything yet about the audition. But I still do it, but it's not gonna ever go the way I want. Or I send him the old three questions in an email, and then at the end, the fourth question's kinda, right, that thing, did we hear about that? Like that's not the only reason I'm writing. And I swear he does this on purpose, even though I know he doesn't. He'll just answer the three things that have nothing to do with the reason I wrote. That's my fault for not just writing one fucking email with one fucking question. Trying to be tricky, trying to manipulate, trying to hide my true intentions. You know, I was thinking about this, motives. Motives is kind of everything. You know, it's why anonymously good acts are so important. Try committing some anonymously good acts in the next week. Do something that doesn't count if anyone sees you doing it. I remember once anonymously doing something, and then a list of people was announced that helped with said thing, and then I wasn't announced, and I was all pissed until I remembered that I checked the anonymous box. So that person was respecting my wishes. And by the way, they privately thanked me. You know, it's one of these online kind of deals. And were amazing. But when I ticked anonymous, they respected it. And then I was all mad. It's like, no. I'm good. Hey, notice me. Why aren't you asking if I'm okay? No, I'm good. Hey, why are you ignoring me? Story of my life. Pretend I'm okay. Need you to make me okay. Mad at you that you don't see that I need you to make me okay. No, I'm okay. Rinse, repeat. Oh man, these fucking behavioral patterns are such monkey shit. Woo! I bet you monkeys are even cleaner in their execution of stuff. Maybe not. I think they're human enough that like, maybe they do have like hidden motives. But anyways, if I do something good, I talked about this, it's called hostage taking. If I do something good and I have no expectation of return, it's just general good vibes all around. I probably even forget that it happened. But if I do something good or write an agent an email asking about how his weekend was, but really I just want to know if I'm up for the CBS show, then I have just kind of muddied the water, because I'm not really asking him how his weekend was. I mean, I can do both, but in that situation, I'm not. And then I'm kind of pissed at him for not being more clear about the show, but I'm the one who's made it muddy. And it's, it's motive, right? Because to just call and go, how was your weekend, and mean it, is perfectly acceptable to then go, by the way, have we heard about the show? But to do that, I have to admit why I'm calling to him and to me. And what's interesting there is that becomes about validity of my voice. am I worth calling and getting the info about? And by the way, again, it's real easy when I'm shooting the show and the film and I'm teaching and I'm like, great, come fucking after, like, right before Christmas, all this stops. I'm hanging it out for 6 months. It's easy because in my imagination, the first three things I audition for, I'm going to book, because what I'm basically doing is going, hey, God, I'm doing everything the right way, so you're going to give me everything I want, right? Or universe or life, insert your version of thing bigger than you in place of whatever. Oh, my God, the biggest bug just splatted my windshield. Let me rinse that crap off. Might need to even pull over. That was such a big bug. Maybe it was a moth or something. But in any case, yeah, so if that motive is shady, it's probably because I don't feel like I'm worth the clarity of the thing. And lately, because my last gig ended a couple weeks ago, and I am saying no to the teaching, even though students want to train in January, I'm like, I'm sorry, I got to go do my own thing, hang it out, desire, want, put my money where my mouth is, train my own acting more than other people's, etc. Now it's like, already the wait, where's the thing that's going to fill the vacuum immediately? Because that's how I think it's going to work. Now, my plans are never, like, crazy. They're all based on stuff that can happen, but they're not, they're, who cares? You know what I mean? Like, who cares? It's still throwing a ball and trying to direct it after it's been thrown. That one I definitely know I can't do, but I try and do it every day when it comes to my desires. I'll state my desire, but then I'll state it like it's for the good of mankind, and then I will basically pretend to be a good person because I believe that will then make it happen. Oh, man. What's interesting, though, is that, and this is part of the reason why I took this drive, I needed to clear my perspective. You know, I needed to just do something I love and hang it out a bit. And that's why I'm on this road right now. And I tell you, I just don't go crazy when I'm driving. It calms me. Might not sound like it, because when I chat with you guys, it's all crazy shit. But it's not that crazy. Come on. That's me faking crazy. I ain't that crazy, mama. Crazy mama. With your ball and chain. Who's that? Who's that chatting between takes, mug? If anybody ever fucking answered my shit, are you even out there? Is there anybody out there? Come on. I'm fucking lobbing. I'm throwing out taters here for you to knock out of the park. You know, I'm doing like 74 mile an hour fastballs right down the center. Is there anybody out there? So, yeah, you know, name me these. It reminds me of the episode of WKRP where they stitched together the songs. Because, you know, they said they were going to give away 10 grand as a promotion, and then the guy got it, and then they had to, yeah, you know. Baby, if you've ever wondered whatever became of me, I'm living on the air in Cincinnati. Cincinnati, everybody, WKRP. Got tired and tired of packing. Oh my God, jingles used to be so good. Silver spoons. Here we are, face to face, a couple of silver spoons. A-team, ba-ba-ba-ba, with the, like, in 1973, a group of, I mean, that alone, phenomenal. Obviously, Family Ties. The show still have, no. When was the last time? I mean, the closest is Leonard Cohen does True Detective Season 2, and everyone's like, ooh, nice work on the credit sequence. Nah, man, whatever happened to, you know, sha-na-na-na. Back in the day, I am going to be that guy who just sits around telling my kids, like, what it was like. I really am. I'm practically doing that with you guys. I mean, if you think about it, some of you listening are young enough that I could have had you had I had a kid young. And I keep telling you what it was like back in the 80s, man. Film buff. So I used to live on Roncesvalles, 91 Roncesvalles. Loved my place there. Anyone who was there loved it. Brilliant loft. And I'd go to the film buff. get a little ice cream, get a DVD. You know, I remember I had that first Chiclet Mac, after the toilet seat Mac, and I had the DVD drive in it, and I would watch fucking movies all the time. I also would get VHS now and then. They still had them then. It was the best. Then I moved away, and Emily and I the other night were like, let's go to a movie store. Like, let's do the thing. So we go to the Film Buff, and the same guy runs it, and he doesn't remember me, and they've updated their system, so we have to, like, reopen a membership. And he's like, I can't really reopen a membership. And I was like, why not? And he says, because we're closing in 2 weeks. Full disclosure, we still haven't returned the 3 DVDs we rented, but we're gonna. Emily, are you listening? You better. She doesn't listen to this podcast. I could say the worst things about her and it'd never get back. Well, it might get back to her, but she doesn't listen. I swear to God, I've talked about this. If you've been listening, you know. I don't even want her to listen. Not because I say anything bad. All I say is how fucking awesome she is and how much I love her. It's because she gets enough of me, but you don't. Hey folks, did a little edit there because I started to hit some weird traffic here and had to make sure I got my on-ramp. So yeah, going on and on about the 80s and then the Film Buff, because it was nice to actually hold the film and actually go out to pick it. And that's part of the whole thing, you know. I won't go on and on about the social networking, but it was nice to actually network. So Netflix and Amazon, they will send something right to your house. But it was pretty nice to get out of my house and go scroll the titles. And I know you can scroll the titles on your TV. I like it most of the time. But man, do I miss the video store experience. It was great. Anyways, it always comes back to tactility. But yeah, I'll be driving my fucking 1985 Porsche. I'll probably have a bunch of earlier models by that point. Actually, you know what? That's not totally true. After driving that Audi all through Germany, and actually my buddy Bill's 1999 or maybe even 98 Boxster, which is still one of the best cars I've ever driven, and he still has it, I could see getting, you know, like a 2018, 2017 Boxster when the time comes, because they're so fucking brilliant. So it's not like I'm trying to be this anachronistic, like, look at me. But I do have a 20-year-old film camera in my car with 120 film in it that shoots, you know, 6x4.5. And I do have a nice old pair of leather driving gloves, like suede. There are some older things. I think it's about, and I'm wearing a watch that, while new, is of an old style because, again, my phone would do all of these things just fine. Take a higher res photo. I could be driving a new Boxster. I could easily find Boxster S's that are much faster than this car, handle better, kind of, handle different, technically better, but not more fun, so that's not better then. For less money than these cars are worth. Boxsters, by the way, if you're in the market for a convertible, go get a Boxster. Look out for MY96, MY97, intermediate shaft bearing, whatever the fuck, failure, but look into that. But get one. They're so cheap, it's like they're giving them away. And they're brilliant. Most fun you can have without getting vintage. So, anyways, it's not like I'm trying to do this old school thing on purpose. I don't know, I keep wanting to go to like a flip phone or that one phone. Can't remember the name of it that's just a phone. And the problem is, A, it's $300 because it's so hip it hurts. And it has a little pencil and a pad in the back for, you know, numbers and messages. My problem is that emails are a legitimately necessary part of my day. Or are they? Oh man, now I'm tempted. Now I'm thinking out loud with you guys and I'm like, are they though? Are they though? It's not like I can't check my email, you know, when I get home and literally just have that little phone. I might try that. If you're a friend of mine and I move that way, bear with me if I don't text you back. right away because I'll save that for laptop. I do like being on my laptop. It's weird. I hate being on my phone. I fucking hate that little thing. But I love being on my laptop, and I like the way iMessage then integrates, so all my texts are on there. Like, there's a cool functionality to my laptop. It feels active. The phone feels passive. And maybe it's just the way I can browse and tab and spiral and look at car parts and YouTube vids and Facebook feeds and read articles. And yeah, so it's not, like I say, I love Boxsters. I love my MacBook Pro. I fucking hate my iPhone. Sorry. I get it's so useful. But I used to love my tape deck and recording on my tape deck. I don't get turned on recording on my iPhone. Although, I'm recording this on my iPhone. Oh, I'm trapped. My friends help me. I'm trapped. I'm trapped in fucking a technological barrier cycle circle of my own making. Yeah, my life's tough. I got it bad. I got it so bad that I'm gonna let you guys go. And I'm gonna drive for another couple hours in this gorgeous, gorgeous, the moon's out. It's not like crazy moon. It's not like blow your mind moon, but it's enough to see the landscape. And by the way, it's enough to see that the landscape doesn't have much going on, so we're gonna keep going. I think I'm gonna put many K's behind me tonight, or down here it's miles. Does anyone remember miles? We used to have those in Canada. I remember working for the Coast Guard. You'd get up past a certain point north of Parry Sound, and there'd still be some mile markers, or like old signs that'd say, you know, Joe's Coffee Shack, 28 miles. And I think 1975, the year I was born, it's like a Jesus year. I think that's the year that Canada went metric. So that sign's been there a long time. So either Joe's been selling enough coffee that he doesn't need to update, or Joe's out of business. Given that we don't all know about Joe's Coffee Shack, I'ma sadly say the latter. I hope he didn't drown. It's possible. People drown, you know. Always wear a life preserver when you're on a boat. You don't think something's gonna happen. That's why people drown. It's like motorbike helmets. I will always wear a motorcycle helmet. The cost of that accident is just too great. I've ridden without motorbike helmets, and I get it, it's cool. But the cost of the accident for me, it's called an accident because it's not planned. If I knew when it was going to happen, I'd just put the helmet on for the day it was going to happen. That's why you need to wear your life preservers, friends. You never know when you're just going to slip and fall over and get tangled in a rope. There's a little safe. You know what? I might start adding some safe boating guides here. Uh-oh. Cops got some cherries on up ahead. I don't really speed anymore. I haven't been speeding. But I hope they're not for me. Maybe I was. Uh-oh. Gonna let you go. I'm Sean. This is Chatted Between Takes. And that's an Indiana wrap.